American higher education is in crisis, yet the mounting attention paid to the problems of high tuition, high student loan debt, and weak employment prospects obscures the extent to which the real source of the crisis is political. According to Suzanne Mettler, who's the Clinton Rossiter Professor of American Institutions at Cornell University and a fellow at the Century Foundation. Suzanne Mettler has spent 8 years researching and writing her new book, Degrees of Inequality, How the Politics of Higher Education Sabotaged the American Dream. The book is published by Basic Books, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Suzanne Mettler to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Joe. I'm delighted to be with you.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you have been dissecting this for a long time, spending 8 years working on this book, which shows just how long this problem has been going on. If you put it on a timeline, where do you see things starting to go awry?
Well, we were doing an excellent job during the middle of the 20th century, from the creation of the GI Bill in 1944 up through Pell Grants in the early 1970s. We were creating these new landmark policies that were expanding access to college. The states were working hard to improve the access and availability of their colleges and universities. I would say it's particularly since about 1980 that things began to go off the rails and to fall behind, and we're doing less of a good job.
So as we talk about it going off the rails, give us a sense of where we're at now, of where the key problem areas are.
Well, what I would say is that overall, we have a political failure to try to address these circumstances. Higher education policy is complicated. There are lots of different dimensions to both the spending and the regulatory policies. And so I focus in on three levels. One is federal student aid, where ironically, we're actually now spending more again in the last few years than we were for a long time. But we're not spending money in a really effective way to keep expanding college graduation rates across the income spectrum. And we could talk more about the various aspects of that. Then a large problem is that states have been pulling back on how much they're contributing to public universities and colleges. Funding has dropped by 26% per student in the average state between 1990 and 2010. And this is the sector of higher education that most college students attend. 73% attend them. And so that's been a big problem because they have made up the difference by raising tuition quite dramatically and also by having to cut back on what they offer students, and that's really hurt graduation rates. And then the third area that I look at is that so much of federal student aid today, $1 in $4, goes to the growing sector of for-profit colleges and universities, which enroll just about 10% of all students these days. And these schools have pretty poor outcomes, and yet the federal government is not holding them accountable. They're continuing to give them a lot of federal student aid money, and yet often these schools leave their students worse off than if they never attended in the first place.
What does that mean, worse off than if they never attended in the first place?
Well, these schools, to their credit, have really tried to work outside of the box, and they have found ways to recruit low-income students for whom traditional academia doesn't necessarily work or try hard to recruit them. But these students need funds to help them to attend, and so these schools recruit them and get them set up with student loan money and Pell Grants and the like. But often after a semester or even less, students drop out. The college graduation rates at this sector is 22% on average. The problem is that the vast majority of their students borrow, and they borrow very large amounts to help them to pay what's actually quite expensive tuition at these schools. So the median debt level when they graduate is $33,000, and about 94% of students that get bachelor's degrees at the for-profits borrow. So say you had someone who beforehand was working in a very low-paying job, then they get this degree and incur a lot of debt in the process, but then afterward, and this all too often happens, they seem unable to get jobs that pay them enough so that they can pay back their debt. And we know that because the default rates of the students who have gone to these schools is so high. About 23% have defaulted on their loans in just a three-year period, and they account for almost half of all student loan defaults. So that's why they can be worse off than if they'd never gone to college in the first place.
Roughly, when it comes to for-profit colleges, how big of a piece of the overall higher education pie do they make up?
Well, they account for 1 in 10 college students today, or actually it's growing now. It's up to about 13%. But they use 1 in 4 federal student aid dollars through Title IV of the Higher Education Act, and they use even more of that from other public policies like the post-9/11 GI Bill. They are permitted by law to receive up to 90% of their revenues from just one federal public policy, the Higher Education Act. And that doesn't even count what they receive from these other policies. So they're heavily subsidized by government, which is why I think it's not only appropriate, but it's really an obligation of the federal government to regulate them so that both taxpayers and their students are getting a good deal.
You talk in the book that, and you mentioned this earlier, but the shift from student grants to student loans had a devastating impact on kids going to school.
Yeah, that's right. And this was a problem for a long time. Pell Grants were created in the 1970s, and they were at their most generous level at that point in time and made a big difference for low-income people being able to attend college. And at that point in time, they accounted for almost 80% of the cost of attending a public four-year university in terms of both tuition, fees, room and board. Now they account for just over 30% of those costs. Part of the problem is that tuition has gone up by high rates. The other problem is that the Pell Grants have not kept pace with inflation. And so what was happening during the 1980s and 1990s in particular is that lawmakers couldn't agree as partisan polarization increased. They couldn't agree on increasing Pell Grant levels very much. And so instead, what they did agree upon was, let's allow more students to borrow more money. And so students turned increasingly to student loans to make up the difference with this dramatic increase in the cost of tuition. And so students became much more highly indebted over time.
The subtitle of the book is How the Politics of Higher Education Sabotage the American Dream. And you make the case that this is, we are talking about partisan politics here.
Yes. So today in Washington, D.C., the U.S. Congress is more polarized by partisanship than at any point in modern history for, you know, at least 100 years. And this accounts for a lot of the difficulties at the federal level, where we have real stalemate around policy issues. And it's particularly surprising in the higher ed area, because for a long time, this was an area where even if Democrats and Republicans had different philosophies about the best policy approaches, they were able to work together and to find sufficient common ground most of the time. But that has become very unlikely. And then the other problem that that exacerbates difficulties in D.C. around higher ed policy is what I call plutocratic governance. Ironically, you will find some policy areas, for example, around the for-profit colleges, where, in fact, Democrats and Republicans do work together. And when they do, it's most often on behalf of powerful vested interests and wealthy individuals. And I found that again and again to be the case in higher ed policy.
You also make the case that federal and state governments used to work a lot harder to support public institutions, and that that relationship really has started to fall apart, or has fallen apart.
Yes, it has very much fallen apart. So this was one of the great accomplishments of state governments through the middle of the 20th century, was investing quite a bit in their public university and college system. But what began to happen, particularly in the early 90s, is that their fiscal obligations to other areas grew dramatically. And here I'm talking about Medicaid, K-12 education, and incarceration. And all of these areas are considered mandatory spending. If you have more inmates, for example, you have to spend more money on prisons and the like. Whereas higher education is the largest discretionary area of most state budgets. So that's what lawmakers have turned to when they're looking for those extra dollars. The other problem is that states have been reluctant to raise revenues. And this is a real problem, even with rising economic inequality, that states have not sufficiently updated their revenue systems. And many states now have laws in place that prohibit them from increasing revenues, for example, unless they go to the voters in a referendum. And so I found that the few states that have been willing to raise revenues don't face this trade-off, and they're able to keep funding all of these different obligations. But that's not the case in most states.
How is it done in the sense of most politicians are not going to thump their chest and say, I took money away from higher education. So how is it gotten away with?
Well, what they do, you know, I mean, there's the basic pattern of inflation is that if you don't continue to increase funding, it's falling behind in real terms. So, you know, there are instances where they actually make cuts, but usually it's more a matter of just ignoring that policy area and making the increases elsewhere. But when you look at every dimension of a state's spending on higher ed in real terms, adjusting for inflation, you find that it's fallen behind dramatically, whether it's per capita of the number of residents of the state, or whether it's per student and so on, or as a percentage of state budget, it's fallen behind in each way.
Suzanne Mettler is our guest. The name of her book, Degrees of Inequality, How the Politics of Higher Education Sabotage the American Dream. That American dream is still with us, and yet it does seem as though college is very much getting the label of being something that is not affordable and in many cases not practical.
Well, yes, and this is a way in which that I hope that my book can help to correct some misunderstandings. Colleges and universities, just in the last handful of years, have been getting a bad rap for being a bad deal, as if they are across the board. And one of the points that I try to emphasize is that where a student attends college makes a big difference in terms of the quality of the education they're going to receive and what the outcomes are going to be. There's dramatic variation by sector and also by particular institutions. So when, you know, people are looking about where to go to college and where they're going to pay tuition for their kids to go to college, they really need to look hard at the value of that particular institution. So, you know, for most students who go to college, they're still going to get a very valuable, have a valuable experience and get a valuable education, and they are going to have dramatically different outcomes than if they had not gone to college in a really positive sense. But there are some deadbeat schools, many of them in the for-profit sector and a few sprinkled throughout other sectors. It's also a real problem in public universities and colleges in some states today that they've had to not only increase tuition dramatically, but also to squeeze resources, for example, putting more and more students in the classroom and turning to more online teaching as a cost-saving measure, cutting back student support services, and all of these things hinder the ability of students to graduate, particularly if they come from less advantaged backgrounds and need more assistance in order to be able to complete their college work.
So for the average student and the average parent who are making these decisions of what college to go to, when you say of looking at the value, how do you quantify that? What are you looking for?
Well, what I would be looking for are a variety of things. One is how much interaction will a student be able to actually have with faculty members? And what is the sort of intellectual environment on the campus? What kind of environment are they going to have with their peers, all of these kinds of things, and what sort of student support is there going to be, particularly from students who come from less advantaged backgrounds. It's also important for parents and students to not be put off by the published price of tuition, because at many universities and colleges, what students actually pay is much less than that. At nonprofit privates, they'll pay about half. The average student will pay about half of the published tuition price. And many people don't know this, and so they think without investigating that they can't afford college when in fact they can.
You make the point in the book that huge increases in four-year college graduation rates have occurred among those from families in the highest income bracket. So, and those numbers are huge and have gone up incredibly in say the last 30 or 40 years.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, we continue to see more and more students going to college these days, and they go to college from across the income spectrum. But then when you look at who's graduating by age 24, there's a real skew by income. So people in the top quarter of the income distribution, 71% have a four-year college degree by age 24. But if you look at the bottom 75%, the rates are really not impressive, and I'm particularly struck looking at below median income, where the rate of college degree attainment has barely improved since the 1970s. So today, only 1 in 10 young people who grow up in the bottom quarter of the income distribution has a college degree by age 24, and it's 15% of those in the next quarter up. So that's really, you know, problematic in a nation where we really pride ourselves on equal opportunity, on people being able to, you know, if they work hard and they're really committed to improving their lives, for them to be able to have the opportunity to do so. We're not doing well by people who are low to middle income.
I want to get back to your issue of value. There was a poll recently taken where more than half of the respondents said that they didn't feel that their college education was worth it, was worth the money and the debt that they went into for that college degree. I guess those are two things that go hand in hand, that problem and the issues you're discussing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that's why I'm saying that higher education increasingly is like a caste system that all too often is taking in students from different points in the income distribution and then turning them out some years later even more unequal than they were at the start, because too many students, particularly from low-income backgrounds, really can end up worse off.
So where are we in this? Is there hope? You talk in the book about the necessity for politicians to work together on this. Not to be overly cynical, but it seems difficult to believe of our current state of Congress to work together on anything. So where are we?
Well, when I look back across American history, I am very struck by how, when it comes to higher education, this is an area where, from the very beginning, from the Northwest Ordinance onward, the federal government has worked together with the states and with private institutions to really try to promote college going. Now, college going meant mostly people who came from very privileged backgrounds right up until the early 20th century, although the Morrill Act in the 19th century helped to expand access in some regards, but much more of this happened in the 20th century, not that long ago. And it seems to me that it's so compelling. Americans believe so strongly in opportunity and opportunity through education as being the way that we can really embrace to try to mitigate inequality and to try to create more economic development and the innovation and creativity we need to grow the economy, as well as to promote civic engagement. I mean, these are compelling goals that Americans have historically stood behind and that we work together in a bipartisan way to achieve. So it seems to me that what we need is a wake-up call to be doing that again.
Does it at all go hand in hand with getting the grade school problem taken care of as well? I mean, we're having trouble with our primary education system, not to mention our higher education system.
Well, it does. I would say yes. The two do go hand in hand. And certainly we have a lot of inequality and lack of opportunity that emerges from our K-12 education system, and we need to continue to address that. But the problems at the higher education level are not reducible to K-12 education problems, because there are more students than ever graduating from high school and going on to college, but the problems emerge once they're there, and the large numbers that do not graduate or who end up worse off. And also, if you look at, say, test scores of people when they're in high school and you look at standardized tests, it turns out that people who come from low-income backgrounds and have high scores are just about as likely to finish a college degree as people from high-income backgrounds with low test scores. So in other words, it's not just academic preparedness that's the problem. It's really very fundamentally a matter of finances. And we find that the reasons why people drop out of college first and foremost have to do with their lack of ability to afford the tuition and the fact that they're working often one or two jobs in order to try to make ends meet, and then they can't keep up with their schoolwork as a result.
The book is very interesting and certainly very important. It is Degrees of Inequality: How the Politics of Higher Education Sabotaged the American Dream. Suzanne Mettler is our guest. The book is published by Basic Books. Suzanne, thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the book is Degrees of Inequality. It is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.